The F Word at Work from Fertility Matters at Work is a conversation about fertility and how it affects people at work. You'll be hearing from our community about what they experienced whilst trying to build their families, as our aim is to help you better understand this issue by sharing these stories, along with our own insights from the work we are doing. Plus, we'll be talking to the organisations making these cultural changes the norm, as well as bringing you thought leaders from the workplace wellbeing space.
Looking at the fertility side of the equation is that we see these topics so crucial in gender parity and in maintaining and keeping women in the workforce, because these two topics that were raised during the summit were menopause and fertility. And I'm sure we'll discuss this a bit more, but these are just two crucial areas that we need to focus on, and we need to take the taboo away from these topics so that it becomes normal for us to have these conversations in the workplace, because we believe that that is going to have such an impact on women staying in the industry and staying in their positions that they're in.
We're delighted that Apricity is sponsoring this series of The F Word at Work. Apricity is the world's first virtual fertility clinic. They use at-home testing and scans, which means just 2 in-person meetings per treatment, compared to around 10 with the traditional model. Apricity's fertility benefit gives end-to-end support and treatment from Apricity doctors and nurses, and transparent pricing with no hidden costs. To find out about the unique Apricity fertility benefit and how they can support your employees with inclusive fertility care, to find out more, please get in touch with the Apricity team by going to apricityfertility.com and clicking on the For Employers section. Now on with the show.
So Claire and I are in my car having just had a very productive work session together. My car was appallingly parked before we got into it, causing a lot of merriment. So we're still chuckling about that.
Yes.
But one of the reasons I was keen to get Claire's thoughts on this whole cross-industry conversation is because Claire's just recently been part of a brilliant webinar for the Employment Laws Alliance. So we've previously spoken in a law firm where they invited all different kind of clients. And this is another example of us working cross-industry. Can you just tell us a bit about the voices that were on the conversation and then what it was about?
Yeah, sure. So we came together. There was myself and a couple of people with lived experience who are actually employment lawyers or previous employment lawyers. And we all talked about why the conversation is so important at work. And actually, before we went into the webinar, we'd had pre-meets about what if people don't ask questions in the chat, or what if it went quiet at the end. And I was quite insistent that in all the times I've done it, it's never happened that nobody's asked anything. And the overwhelming feedback from that session actually was they'd never seen the chat so busy. So really? It just goes to show that the conversation is A, very much needed, and B, just takes off when you start putting people in that space. Everyone's got a lot to say about it.
So was it more focused on the employment law aspect, or was it just raising awareness of the fertility conversation?
No, it was the generic fertility conversation. Obviously, you had people on the call who are employment lawyers who work in that space, so they understand the challenges that you have with clients and delivering of service, because there are different challenges being a lawyer and you have tighter deadlines to work to. But all in all, the conversation was just generally about why it matters, why it's important, and more importantly, the impact it has on people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and you've got an upcoming conversation that you're speaking on with the CIPD. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So on the 5th of June this year, I've been invited to a women's health in the workplace conversation. So, you know, if people have listened to me before, I don't like to label this a women's health issue because it isn't. But obviously there are bits of it which are applicable to women. And that's going to be held as a webinar. And I'm with another amazing speaker called Sophie Richards, who's going to talk about endometriosis and is a health advocate too. And that's just reaching out to people in the HR space to educate them about this conversation.
Now, we previously in the last series spoke with Rachel Suff from the CIPD about the guidelines, which you were involved in that conversation, and we know that their approach is evolving in terms of how they're supporting the conversation. So what you're enabling here is the CIPD, which is the membership organisation for HR professionals, to really hear it from the top, I suppose, that, well, this should be part of their thinking.
Yeah, I mean, the CIPD, when they put the guidance together last year, was just a massive stride forwards for me and for probably thousands of people who are HR learning and development professionals across the country. And the very fact that they recognised it and did something about it was just a huge tick for me. But continuing that conversation is really important to embed the why it matters and why we need to have these conversations and chats about it, because actually just having standalone guidance is just more of a tick in the box. This is about culture change. We talk about this a lot in Fertility Matters, culture change and actually embedding into organisations that it's really important.
And when we're talking about cross-industry conversations, which is what this episode's ultimately about, and you're going to hear from the chat that I did for the HBA session that Becky and I went to Switzerland to facilitate, which was for the pharmaceutical sector, what would you say to people within a sector about their responsibility really to lead the charge on this? Because it's what we're trying to encourage within our members.
Yeah, so I think just never assume you're the only one that's having this conversation. That's one of the big ones. So we know that united voices have more impact. So if you are part of wider workforce groups in your industry, definitely reach out and have those conversations with other people, because guaranteed they'll be probably trying to do the same thing. And I think as a collective, you just have a lot more power to change things.
Especially when sometimes the perception can be, oh gosh, it's another thing that we've got to address and have we got the time? That collective approach can almost lessen the burden, can't it?
Yeah, it does, because you come together, you share learnings, you actually can borrow, I don't know, policy guidance, whatever, off people, and actually it's really beneficial. And then it helps with the industry attraction in terms of getting people to come and work in your organisation or in your sector, because if you're giving a signal that you're supporting fertility conversations, and it's really important to signal that as a whole rather than as individual, because you're going to lose out on talent ultimately.
And I think that best practice thing is key, especially when we're talking about different industries who might have different challenges depending on how the workforce work. We're really trying to gauge that and utilise it within our membership. For example, when we've got retailers or we've got utility companies, and the more conversations we can get cross-industry, the more insights we can get to ultimately make the outcome better.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this conversation, we've said this so many times, it's so intersectional. It doesn't matter where you work, what you do, what your job is, how many hours you work, what your gender is, it will touch somebody in somewhere in the workplace at some time, and not just in the UK, globally as well.
Yeah.
So welcome to this episode of The F Word at Work. And I'm delighted to welcome Sabine Hutchinson, who is the Vice President of the Healthcare Business Women's Association, EMEA region. She's also a life sciences thought leader. And I met Sabine at the Gender Summit in Switzerland that Novartis hosted on behalf of the Healthcare Business Women's Association. And we'd had this brief conversation via email about doing a podcast chat. And then we met in person and both agreed that we needed to go away and absorb what we'd heard and then have a podcast chat. And so that's what we're going to do. But first of all, Sabine, I was just looking at your website and I don't know whether I've done you justice by describing you as a life science thought leader, but I thought that was a fascinating job title. I know you wear many hats, but just tell me a bit more about you and what you do, and then we'll talk more about the HBA.
Yeah, absolutely. I do wear a lot of hats, but I think we all do, don't we? In our lives today, we all have so many hats, whether that be in our private life as spouses, mothers, friends, daughters, and then also as we move into our careers. I do wear a hat for the HBA. I have been volunteering for the HBA probably 8 or 9 years now, so I'm quite passionate about our mission and what we're doing, because I feel that it's so important that we all find a platform where we can use our voices in that platform. And for me, that's the HBA. And I have been in various positions, and I'm currently the president of the EMEA region, and we're growing incredibly. Actually, I just saw a post today that we're now also in Eastern European, so Ljubljana. So we're just expanding like crazy, which is great. And I have another hat that I wear where I'm a CEO and co-founder of a company, Zeus Plus. And we are focused on consulting services in the life science industry. So I guess that's a bit of the thought leadership piece that comes in on the life science side.
So let's start by just setting the scene about the Gender Summit that happened just last week in Basel, or Baal, as I'm now learning about how it can be pronounced in different ways, depending on which side of the border you're on. Because I'd love to just hear your thoughts on what the objectives were for the HBA in terms of putting on that conversation, and also get your reflections on the amazing keynote we heard from Mary Stutz, president of the HBA, and more of the kind of insights that you picked up.
You know, the HBA, we're constantly looking for audiences that we can tap into to really, our main mission is really to look at gender parity. That is one of the main missions that we have within this organization. We, however, also, women's health is a key pillar of our mission as well. And so when we had the opportunity to work with so many of our corporate sponsors, you know, the event was, we were fortunate to have Novartis and Roche, Merck Germany, Deloitte, Takeda, I think I've listed them all, and Novartis, as you mentioned, that's where the event took place. So we were able to pull those organizations together, and also with your organization as well, looking at the fertility side of the equation, is that we see these topics so crucial in gender parity and in maintaining and keeping women in the workforce, because these two topics that were raised during the summit were menopause and fertility. And I'm sure we'll discuss this a bit more, but these are just two crucial areas that we need to focus on, and we need to take the taboo away from these topics so that it becomes normal for us to have these conversations in the workplace, because we believe that that is going to have such an impact on women staying in the industry and staying in their positions that they're in.
Because I thought it was really interesting in Mary's keynote she shared about how women were leaving the sector in droves, was the terminology she used. And we know from the conversations that we have about the impact of fertility struggles as a starting point that people do talk about the impact it's having on their career. They're either sidelined for promotion, they're having to step back because of the stress of treatment, they're being overlooked. And it's not just affecting women. We always want to talk about this as a people issue, but it's really important, like you say, to take away the taboo. And I mean, we're following, we feel, what's been going on with the menopause conversation. Do you think that the menopause taboo has lessened? We know we still have a lot of education to be done, but in the UK, it's certainly been on the agenda for a good 5 years now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has gotten much better, 100%. But there's still so much to do, but these continued conversations are so crucial. We were at Reuters a couple of years ago and had a conversation. It was about endometriosis and menopause. And we had participants in the audience that actually talked about women in leadership roles within their organizations that were struggling with menopause, that were having difficulties in some of the fog that we talk about, that we hear so much about, that women struggle with. And certain members of the leadership team are like, well, she's lost it because of one meeting. So you're right. We're having wonderful, crucial conversations, but there's still that mindset to where if a woman has an off day, often it's considered, well, she's out and she's lost it. And that's not the case, of course, because it's a struggle. And those are the pieces that I think are impacting women, again, leaving, because they're like, you know, I don't want to deal with this. You know, I haven't lost it. I'm still an impactful, powerful leader. And just because I've had a bad day or I'm dealing with menopausal issues, that shouldn't impact how I'm seen within the workplace.
And from your experience of life sciences and the healthcare sector, how open are people to learning about these taboo topics, especially when they are deemed to be quite gender specific and we might be talking about male dominated environments? Do you think that obviously with the pandemic and there's been more of a focus on talking about mental health, and we always try to put the correlation there between the fertility impact and the mental health impact because it's so significant. Do you think that there is that level of understanding and compassion within the sector?
Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah, I think as you mentioned, it's been a topic in the UK. You've said it, you know, it's been for 5 years now, it's been a topic. So we're getting there. So 100% organizations and individuals, and also we are much more open to raise this topic and to have these discussions. And I think that that's what we just need to continue doing before it becomes completely natural. And also looking at different cultures, because in some cultures, it is going to be more difficult to have this conversation than others. And so it's a journey. And I'm pleased that we are having the conversations and we're having these health summits, because that's going to continue and to make it again more natural. So we're getting there.
And when we talk about different cultures, when there are maybe challenges within people's communities to talk about difficult issues, it's where we almost want the workplace to be more open, don't we? And so when people are coming into work, we talk about psychological safety at work. And if they can't talk about it within their community, for example, we're talking about different minority groups, then do we think that the workplace has a duty to try and support them and bring that topic to the forefront of those more taboo topics?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Specifically talking about mental health as a whole, I think these issues fall under mental health. Just as you said, you know, those are the conversations that you're having with the fertility group as well that you're leading. And so 100%, I think if an organization wants to remain competitive and have a good culture and maintain a positive culture, then it definitely has to be a topic.
And I know from, I'm just going to refer back to Mary's keynote, that she was talking about a listening project mm-hmm. that she'd been doing among a lot of leaders within the healthcare sector. Are there certain challenges that you feel need to be addressed in order to get this conversation to remain on the agenda? I mean, we're in a bit of a bubble at Fertility Matters at work. We're really passionate about this conversation. We talk about it all the time, and we're engaging with organisations who are engaging with us because they've seen the need, whether it's been employee-led or it's from an HR or, you know, ED&I point of view. But there are obviously challenges because mm-hmm. there's so much on the workplace wellbeing agenda. And when we're talking about trying to retain women and engage them, you know, within the healthcare sector, what kind of challenges do you feel there are around these types of conversations?
I think it's the sustainability and the continuity of keeping the conversation alive. I think sometimes, you know, before we started the podcast, I was like, oh, I have to turn everything off because I get distracted, you know, if an email pops up or a message pings in. And I think that that can happen in the workplace and on these topics as well. We can get distracted with other bits that are coming in, which are also crucial. So it's around setting priorities. I think that organizations like the HBA and like what you're doing, those are the organizations that are going to keep the momentum going, because for us and for many others as well, it's not a topic of the day. It's something consistent that we will continue to push until it becomes natural. And I think then, you know, you start to look at other important topics that are coming in. So I think the focus and not getting too distracted with other things and, you know, the shiny objects, you can go off in a different direction. But I believe that if we all continue, then we will have this maintenance and this continued. And it's not just going to be in 2023, but many years beyond as well.
And when we were at the event in Switzerland, we facilitated an amazing panel with representatives from the different corporate sponsors. As you mm-hmm. said, we're so passionate about storytelling. It's why we've got the podcast, and it's why we're talking today, because we feel it's so powerful for people to hear those lived experiences, and it resonates so much with people. And I know when you and I spoke after the session, you were saying that there was just so much that had come to light and how important it was that we had these voices, especially at all different levels throughout an organisation, because we know that it's important to have senior leadership. And there's an element of confidence that comes with those people, but it may be more difficult as a topic for those who are less confident to talk about, because they might be earlier in their career and they don't feel that they can speak up. But this role modelling piece, it's really key here, isn't it? People sharing their experience. Is that something that you are also passionate about?
Absolutely. And I have to say, it was completely after the session that you led. Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was biases, but it was ideas that I had in my head around fertility and what does it mean? And even, I feel I'm an open individual and look at so many perspectives, but even that session opened my mind also in completely new directions. And that's what's important, because the individuals that come to these events, I think that that happens over and over again. And I was so impressed at the openness and the storytelling, and especially the different perspectives, how everyone on the panel had a completely different type of challenge that they dealt with and how their organization supported them through that process. Maybe I'm going off from the original question, but I really wanted to mention that as well, is that I think that looking at these stories and looking at the individuals is so important, and actually realizing myself, I also struggled with miscarriages, you know, wasn't able to have children. And this was years ago. And after that panel, I thought, oh my goodness, I actually struggled with fertility issues, but I didn't categorize it that way. It was just, I didn't have those types of discussions because I didn't put myself into that category. Maybe that sounds a bit strange, but that was a trigger for me. And I think, again, these conversations are going to help more individuals, men and women, because you had gentlemen on the panel as well, to have those conversations and have it become norm. I'm sorry if I went on a tangent there. Maybe that didn't go into the question that you're asking.
No, not at all, because I think that's what you're talking about, is having the language to validate an experience. And that's why we hope to bring them to light. Often people do suffer in silence because they just don't know where they fit and they don't know how valid it is, because their story might be different to another person's story that they've heard. I mean, my story, for example, is that we went through one round of IVF treatment to have our son, Becky, who was also on the panel and is my co-founder at Fertility Matters at Work, went through five rounds. And there's times where I always say I was lucky because, you know, I just had the one round, but it still had a significant impact on my own family building. We weren't able to have further children. And everybody's experience is still a struggle.
Exactly.
You know, we weren't taught about this at school, so we're having to get over all of that we can't kind of conceive naturally. And we just want it to be validated, because what we're really trying to get across, I think, is what you're also highlighting, is how varied each conversation is. When you're talking about this topic, you've got to understand the individual impact, because it's so nuanced with different people's experiences.
Yes, absolutely. And bringing the conversations back to the healthcare providers as well. Again, I think I mentioned this to you after the panel, is that my healthcare provider didn't make any suggestions to me. It was like, oh, well, that's unfortunate that that happened, but not what else can we do and what else can we look at? So it was interesting as part of the panel, you know, there's so many, the organizations and some of the sponsors, you know, I was completely impressed with Merck, that what they're providing to their employees around fertility support, but that level of education and what they're doing, I think needs to go down also another level to the physicians that we're dealing with, because they also need to be having those conversations with patients and supporting them in the next stage of whatever the journey that they're on, whether it be to find solutions and to find fertility support or not.
It'd be interesting if we reach a point where a person goes to their healthcare professional and they're guided adequately, both in what they need on their journey and at work, and all these moving parts that come with it are connected. I mean, that would just be the dream, because there's such a disconnect. And as you know, our approach is just in the workplace, trying to get that connect between the person who needs the support, whether it's having a conversation with a peer or a manager and then being signposted. Because we're not saying to organizations, you've got to pay for it. What we're saying is, we want you to understand the impact emotionally, psychologically, the physical, the financial impact. But what do you hope that the HBA can do in terms of encouraging its members to take this as a serious conversation in 2024? Because I know we're talking about potentially looking at research opportunities and trying to find more ways to state the business case ultimately, because we know from our experience so far that the research is hugely beneficial to highlight the impact, because sadly, you know, we know this is a vast reaching issue.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So this is actually an area that we want to focus on. So we have a few pillars that we are looking at our objectives for 2023. We've set two-year objectives now for the EMEA, I'm referring to. And those are working with our corporate partners. And this topic feeds into that perfectly. So we want to look at how can we co-develop programs and specifically on these topics. So the health summit that happened in Basel, we want to take that and expand that as we move into the next 2 years at least. So, you know, 2 years focus, it'll go beyond, but that'll be our focus for now, and continue to have these types of conversations and to do similar types of events. So that's going to be a key piece, and working closely with our corporate partners. And also the other piece of what of our stakeholders are our members and our volunteers. So we want to continue also at a local level of the chapters that we have to have events on these topics and just to continue this. So not only with the individuals, but also with organizations. And without the two together, we're going to be less successful. So we feel our impact is going to be greater if we're working with corporate partners, smaller companies as well. So we hope those learnings are going to come to smaller organizations and continue to push the topic with our members and volunteers, because it's high on their list of priorities as well.
Thank you, Sabine. It's been really interesting talking with you. And I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add in terms of things that you're wanting to discuss.
No. And also looking forward to partnering with more organizations like yourself, because again, it's together we're strong and we can't do this in isolation. And so we need to connect. And that's, I think, what was really valuable at the summit is the connections. You know, I connected with the leader of Merck. So we're going to have another conversation. So it all, it's a snowball, you know, it grows. And the more we talk about it, the more impact and the more we spread our voices. I believe Mary said this. It was, I took notes during one of the sessions and someone said, be curious, be passionate, but take action. And I think that if we can follow those three bits there, I think we can have a very valuable impact.
Yeah, exactly. It's that taking action
which is so key. It doesn't have to be a case of there's a fear of doing it wrong, or there might be a fear of it costing too much, or saying you're going to do something and then too many people come forward and saying they need it. What we're trying to overcome is highlighting that by doing something, recognizing that this is a valid topic, fertility issues that people have need to be discussed in the workplace, you're validating people's experiences. And like you said, you didn't realize you fit into that camp. It's so significant that people feel recognized and that they know that their challenge is real and the impact that it's having on them is real. And they're not going mad, like with the menopause fog, you know, what are there, like 47, 48 symptoms? And it's just crazy that people are meant to just carry on regardless, you know, similar to endometriosis, that conversation.
Absolutely.
So long, women have just been expected to just shut up and put up and bear it. And you know, we're dealing with this period pain in the workplace with such stigma about it. There's so much to address. And I think, like you say, the action is so key. And hopefully more of these conversations can encourage people to do something rather than just think, oh, it's too difficult for us to know where to start. We don't know where to start. Start by having a conversation of sorts about it.
We want to do, absolutely. So thank you for all that you do as well. I was really impressed. And thank you for leading that panel. It was so insightful.
Thank you. Yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant to be there. And the panelists were just amazing. We're always so touched when people put their hands up and say they're willing to speak, because we do take it really serious. And we have a lot of chats ahead of the panel themselves, because we're ultimately taking people back to a trauma. And so we're always very careful when we're dealing with people's lived experiences. And one of the panelists, Daniel, the man that you mentioned, his story really hit me when he first told it. It took about 25 minutes. And the fact that he was there on the day with his wife and his child, it was such a devastating story, but so amazing, you know, the outcome of it. So yeah, a great, great conversation.
Do follow us on our socials at Fertility Matters at Work on Insta and LinkedIn, and at Fertility Matters Work on Twitter. Plus, we've got lots of free resources to download at fertilitymattersatwork.com.